While world attention, understandably, has been focused on the bloody wars in Syria, Iraq, Libya, and Yemen that have produced a massive wave of immigration to Europe, not seen in many decades, the intractable Israeli-Palestinian conflict goes on. Flashpoints of violence between Israelis and Palestinians rise to the surface on a regular basis, symbolizing the failure of multiple international efforts to resolve this conflict since the founding of Israel as a nation-state in 1948. The senseless death of three members of a Palestinian family in the West Bank village of Douma is but one of many similar incidents. A firebomb attack on the home of the Dawabsha family on July 31st is thought to have been carried out by Jewish extremists, but no one as yet has been charged with the crime. The latest member of the family to die was 27-year-old Riham Dawabsha, mother of 18-month-old Ali, who died on the day of the attack. 8 days later, his father, Saad, also died. Ali's 4-year-old brother, Ahmed, is still being treated in hospital. A new book written by Eve Spengler, associate professor of sociology at Boston College, explores the decades-long Israeli-Palestinian conflict by examining important chapters of that complex history, the concepts of Zionism, anti-Semitism, liberation, and possible new paths to a negotiated settlement. Your reporter spoke with Professor Spengler about her book, titled Understanding Israel-Palestine, Race, Nation, and Human Rights in the Conflict. Here she discusses some essential truths about the conflict, of which many Americans are unaware, and a possible human rights framework that could lead to a resolution of the long-standing conflict.
So let's start with Israel and Palestine together are a little bit larger than the size of New Jersey. There are about 12 million people there, almost exactly evenly divided, 6 million Israeli Jews and 6 million Palestinians, some of them Christian, most of them Muslim. And so we're confronted with a kind of paradox. Under, you know, theories of democracy, you have communities, each of whose individual members is of equal human worth. Human rights doctrine has to start with the worth and dignity of each individual. And two communities of roughly equal size, 6 million each. This could be a formula for democratic, peaceful, prosperous living together, but instead these relatively equally worthwhile individuals in equal-sized communities are confronted with this terrible paradox. One is an occupier and one is the occupied. The occupier has a modern Western technology state with a high standard of living, with unlimited American diplomatic, military, and financial support. And the other group are stateless people, in the case of the almost 2 million who live in Gaza, probably also mostly homeless people. And this struggle between an occupier to expand and maintain an occupation and an occupied people to come to some more just terms to live an ordinary life, that is the paradox of Israel-Palestine.
Eve, I wanted to ask you about the consensus that has been built since the 70s, mm-hmm. Around a two-state solution, mm-hmm. from Jimmy Carter and Anwar Sadat to Clinton and Obama. A lot of the negotiating sessions that have been held between Israelis and Palestinians over the years has been around a two-state solution. It seems that in the last couple of years, there's a recognition that this may be a dead end, not least of which is the continuing failure to reach anything like a two-state solution. Benjamin Netanyahu publicly declared his opposition to the two-state solution, coming out of the closet on that one. Eve, maybe you can explain what the alternative to a two-state solution is among activists in Israel and Palestine, and yourself, too, who have gravitated towards a different way forward for a solution.
On the left, there has been some thought among leading Palestinian intellectuals that the Palestinian quest for a normal and decent and fair life needs at some point to abandon the framework of a national liberation struggle. They need to say to Israelis, hey, you know what? You've won. You've got all the land. You've got all the aquifers. You've got all the roads. And hey, guess what? You've got all of us, too. Now, where do we sign up for voter registration? Where do we sign up for our national health insurance card? So there are some Palestinian intellectuals who've thought that way, and they have undertaken to work with Israeli intellectuals who agree with them. And so there's a lot of work going forward very quietly, never covered on the media, about what would water look like in a one-state solution? What would land rights look like? How many refugees really could return? Where would the roads go if they weren't only connecting illegal settlements back to Israel proper? How would you have a grid that served everybody? How would you have a power grid that served everybody? So a lot of that planning is already going forward on the left, and that's what I've gravitated toward. Because the two-state solution was really never enthusiastically endorsed by either Zionists or Palestinians.
Well, Eve, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you this one last question, and that revolves around the major point that you've raised in this book, and that is that you believe that to move forward to a long-term peaceful solution in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we have to start in the framework of human rights. And although we don't have a lot of time, maybe you could spell that out for us.
Absolutely. I think human rights are valuable in their own right because they insist on the dignity and worth of individuals. They're also, I think, important to us because they're looking toward the future. The premise is everybody who's here gets to stay here. No one gets pushed into the sea. Now, how do we do it so that everybody gets treated decently? And lastly, I think human rights are important because they do require some action. The truth is not halfway between Martin Luther King and the Ku Klux Klan. The truth isn't halfway between the union and some sweatshop owner. The truth is the truth, and it needs to be stood up for. So I think human rights gives us a place to stand without being Middle East experts, without speaking all the languages, but knowing some of the history. It gives us a place to stand, at least to ask that America use the standard of human rights in relation to this conflict.
That was Eve Spangler, Associate Professor of Sociology at Boston College and author of the book Understanding Israel-Palestine, Race, Nation, and Human Rights in the Conflict. Find more views on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.